Hello, hello, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Varun Alvaconda, who you can find literally nowhere. Even when you try hard enough on social media, you will fail. And just before we get into this preview of the Oval Test, which starts tomorrow between England and India, I want to let you guys know that these podcasts are powered by our supporters on Patreon. And you can become one of them by going to patreon.com/goodareaspodcast. Then you can enjoy ad-free content. You can slag us off in the Discord, talk to us exclusively, give us quick picks recommendations, all of that fun stuff. And now let's get to the subject matter. Varun. The series currently stands 2-1 in England's favour. There was a lot of drama at the end of the Old Trafford test. Tempers flared. Everyone had their pitchforks out. Everyone was pissed off collectively on different things, I suppose. And then prior to the start of this test match, literally like 2 days after all of that drama, we have Gautam Gambhir versus Lee Fortis, the groundsman at the Oval, and you could, or everyone saw that video in which Gambhir was pointing his finger at Lee Fortis, and he basically said that you can't tell us anything. He said that 4 times in 4 different ways, and also said, you are just a groundsman, stay in your capacity. Now, first, like, I just want to know your thoughts on this, and then I'll share mine.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Gambhir being Gambhir, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Like, I don't know what the I assume that they were training probably too close to the pitch and the groundsman probably needed more space, I'm assuming, is the context. So he's probably, like, I think he was probably, like, more than, well within his rights to tell Gambhir and the team to just stay further away, I'm assuming. And then I think, like, Gambhir and being Gambhir, I think it's like, yeah, okay, yes, I mean, not surprised, I think it's so I would put it.
Yeah, I mean, Gautam Gambhir getting into an altercation with anyone is very believable and business as usual, so let alone a groundsman, I mean, I don't think that surprised me. Although I will say this, that my understanding of the issue is that they were too close to the surface and had rubber spikes on. And that was basically the issue. So, I mean, rather than telling the guy off, you could have just gone on and changed your shoes. That could have worked, Gauthi. But, of course, you know, he has this great ability, Gautam Gambhir, to divert all of that negative press that had been surrounding England all onto himself in a jiffy. And I don't think anyone can do that better than Gautam Gambhir, being the sort of bloke that he is. And yeah, there is the whole classism issue over here. And Varun, I mean, I know you've lived a lot of your life in England, but you travel to India a fair bit. I have lived 11 years in Canada, but I have lived the majority of my life in Pakistan and continue to do so currently. And I have noticed this about our subcontinent culture, that there is this superiority complex that people have over others who work in professions which they don't deem respectful enough. And if you compare that to Canada, at least in my experience, you know, I saw how people spoke to janitors with a lot of respect. And when Gautam Gambhir says, you are just a groundsman, it does reek of classism. And that, I feel, is a regional issue over here, maybe even a post-colonial hangover, if you will. And I feel like all the slander that he's copping for that is justified.
Yeah, I think it's, as you said, there is a bit of a class issue at times, I do think, in the subcontinent. I assume India's Pakistan are quite a bit similar in that sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I think it's, you almost separate the white-collar stuff and the blue-collar stuff quite distinctly, though, it blends a lot more here, in a way I don't think it does there. I think that's fair. Like, I also don't particularly, like, pay attention to this, so I don't really care. As much as, like, so it's one of those type of things where I don't feel that strongly about it. I think Gambhir is just being Gambhir. I think it's like his classism is independent of him. I think a bored soul has an interesting point. He's like, very wrong on your part to judge Gambhir. The groundsman has a history of picking fights with the distinct thing, as opposed to Gautam Gambhir as a peace loving man. Like, is my counter argument to that? Like,
so I know that Gambhir is a certain kind of individual who probably cannot manage a smile. His facial muscles aren't capable of pulling off a smile. That said, what a bored soul has brought up over here with the groundsman having issues with other visiting teams, I think that would have been a valid point. And Gautam Gambhir might even have had a case had he conducted himself in a civil manner. But when he goes on to call him just a groundsman, I think he completely loses the battle. And now you've got all sorts of media outlets reporting on this. Honestly, this Anderson Tendulkar Trophy has had more non-cricket-related things flare up as opposed to cricket-related things, which literally has been the story of the series. And to me, personally, if you ask me, I can even go on and spot the nuance in this situation, but the fact that he's gone on and degraded someone for their profession, that cannot be justified. You cannot defend that. So he completely loses the battle over here. My uncle came up with a random conspiracy theory. He said that England had a lot of heat on them, so maybe they set him up. And I said, hypothetically, even if I believe you, that they set Gambhir up with the cameras and everything, and then the interview that Lee Fortis gave later, which makes him look like a really decent bloke, right? Hypothetically, let's believe that they did set him up, right? Even then, Gambhir has only hurt himself. You know, like I said, he could have gone on and worn different shoes, and none of the other guys reacted to it, right? Kotak didn't react. Tendiskata seemed to be kind of easing the situation at times. And Morne Mokkel was too busy chewing his gum. It was like he wasn't even there, right? And it's interesting, you know, how we know what level of coverage this series is getting. On one hand, you've got Boria telling everyone what train India's boarding and what time Shubman Gill is taking a dump, with what viscosity and whatnot. So this sort of stuff does kind of, you know, overtake everything else as far as the media is concerned. And it's not a good look for Gautam Gambhir.
Yeah, it's very rare to see this stuff happening in England that is in the Ashes. You usually see a lot of the off-field shithousery happen during the Ashes. It's not very often you see that from English media whilst playing India. It's very, so that's what surprised the hell out of me. And I'm really annoyed with Gambhir, because Gambhir couldn't let India have the moral win for one day. Like, I'm like, we were so good. Like, it got so bad that Australians were backing India. Do you know how bad? Like, and the Australians and Indians just hated each other, like, just 6 months ago during the BGT, right? And every single Australian fan is just supporting India after that. So it's like, you could let Indian fans have a moral win for one day before all this nonsense happened.
Yeah, I mean, look, it literally was, what, 48 hours later that this happened, after everyone was hating on Ben Stokes, which, I mean, I have my opinions on, which you can look in or hear or listen to in different podcasts that I've done. But then again, you know, I feel like he just can't go a day without the negative press, man. That's just Gautam Gambhir for you. And I mean, he has his own style. He was a politician not too long ago, and that side of him does come out. But anyway, I think we've spoken enough about this. There's one really interesting comment by Bhanu Pratap, though. I want you to bring this up for us over here, where he says that, is this a sort of scenario where you've got a probable racist? Yes, that was the one. Where you've got a probable racist versus a possibly classist. So what Gambhir said was very, very clearly classist. I don't think there are any two ways about that. Even if he didn't mean it, the verbiage is classist, right? I think we can all agree on that. And over there, on the other hand, you've got Lee Fortis, who is a probable racist. We have no evidence of him being a racist. So when you weigh all of those things up against each other, Gambhir is in the wrong automatically. And then again, this is a groundsman who, when he says you are, you know, not in your place to tell us anything, he's the guy preparing the pitch. If anything, it is his job, no? Yeah.
So I think the comments are saying that apparently the groundsman said something to the staff, the Raghu. So I don't know. I don't know what's happened there. Again, I'll be honest, dude. I genuinely don't care. Just like something I laughed at, because I'm like, okay, of course it's Gautam Gambhir is involved in this. And then I just forgot about it. But then again, it's like, I don't think I think the media they just took it a step too far, I do think.
Yeah.
It's like popular for the sake of just being, I'm like, why is this popular? What the hell? Like, what's going on here, man? It's like, we just had an insane series. How is this the most popular story that's come out of this?
Yeah, I mean, that's literally been the story of this series. You've got these weird things which keep popping up and they become the talking points. And I originally had your viewpoint as well. I was like, so big deal, Gambhir fighting a bloke. That happens all the time. But then, of course, I feel like that nuance needs to be pointed out, because I'm very against this. I see it all around me in Pakistan, where, you know, house help is treated poorly. And I always make sure in my own house that I always say thank you, because that's what I've learned from Canada, right? And that's something that we all collectively need to change. So I would even go as further as saying that Gambhir might just be a victim of the environment that he has been brought up in. Although he should take responsibility of this. Don't get me wrong. He was in the wrong. But I feel like this is a regional issue, if you will. And even if Lee Fortis was being a prick, what verbiage was used by Gambhir completely shifts everything. That's my opinion on it. We can move on, Varun. Let's please move on. And before we get into the lineups and injuries and whatnot, I just want to talk about the weather forecast with you. I checked it today. and I saw potential rain on 3 of the 5 days during this test match. Now, I want you to do the same, because weather forecasts differ. And honestly, my experience with weather forecasts has been quite poor. I thought a couple of games in the Pakistan-Bangladesh T20I series would be rained out. None of that happened. I thought that there would be rain at Old Trafford. Did not happen. So I don't even trust me anymore. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, so from what I can see, so there's supposed to be rain tomorrow at around 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, it's between like 10 and I think 4, it says on Friday. So that's a sizable chunk if it's true, I think. Uh-huh. So Saturday seems more normal. And then Sunday, I think again, it's more at like evening time, like 4:30-ish. Hmm.
So potentially, even if we do get rain, we should be able to get, let's say, 4 days of play.
Probably, I'd assume so. Okay, yeah. Unless it's if we see an Old Trafford style pitch, then it's going to be a draw regardless of the situation.
Yeah. Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, we're going to get to that. But I really do hope that weather does not interrupt this test match too much, because it's generally been flat tech summer in England. So if we do get a considerable amount of rain, chances are that this could be another draw. And then again, you know, this series has kind of heated up to this point where we want an answer, right? Can India, you know, square the series 2-2 and get valuable World Test Championship points and kind of get bragging rights as well, because they didn't lose the last time they toured, right? It was also 2-2. And on the other hand, England would probably really, really want to win the series now, because, you know, they're pretty pissed themselves. Both those sides probably don't want to have dinner with each other at this point, I feel. So I also feel that as spectators and people who, you know, are avidly following this series, and also people who are covering it like yourself and myself, we deserve a proper final test match. And here's to hoping that the weather can kind of support us over there. Anyway, coming to the conditions, right? You mentioned to me, Varun, that the Oval seems to be a sort of pitch where the side which wins the toss should be bowling first. Now, can
I
you
think
shed?
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Can you shed more light on that?
I can't remember where I heard it. I believe like the last 14 times or something that whoever won the toss just decides to bowl first. I think Sri Lanka won chasing as well, didn't they, last year?
Yes.
So that does seem to be. Like I think from when I checked the data, like day one seems to be a good day to bat, so I'm a bit confused. It just doesn't break up from what I saw.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why I think it's a good chasing place.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, we have seen some visuals off the deck and it has a very strong tinge of green. A lot of people are currently being fooled into believing that this is going to be a very grassy, seamer-friendly surface. I can tell you this from experience of covering cricket for a good 4 years now, that looks can be deceiving. This could very well turn out to be a flat deck. Do not assume that it will be fast bowler friendly just by looking at the surface right now. And they might even trim the grass a bit. Who's to say? And they added grass to the Old Trafford surface, and that only made it, you know, stick together or hold together even better. So, I mean, my assumption for now is that, you know, batting will generally not be too difficult over here.
Yeah, so London, I don't think, has had a lot of sunny days. It's not been, like, cold, like, London. Like, it's not been, I wouldn't say it's been cold, but, like, I don't think it's been as sunny as it was, like, a couple of weeks ago. So I do think there is, maybe that does help the pitch maybe have some level of spice to it.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I mean, only time will tell what the deck has to offer. And all I really hope for is that, you know, we saw 24 wickets fall across 5 days at Old Trafford. And whilst that test match had its moments, don't get me wrong, it ends up being a really, really good draw, because India pull off a phenomenal recovery. I mean, when you are trailing by 311 and you have to bat out 5 sessions and you manage to do that with ease, that deserves a lot of praise. I'm fully there that I don't think it was a terrible test match. I even enjoyed a lot of parts within that test match, right? But I don't want to see 24 wickets fall in a test match. I want to see either 40 wickets fall or close to 40 or at least 33 at the very least, right? So this has been kind of a theme on this or throughout this entire tour. And I really hope to see that something, you know, changes over here. We get to see more wickets, Varun, because you and I are both people who enjoy bowling more than batting, I feel.
Yeah, definitely. I think the fans and the players, or everyone deserves a 3-day test match, because I genuinely don't think the players have it in them to play another 5-day test match. Mm. Like, it's like, I think Jared was telling us, right? The journalists, everyone is dead, seems to be exhausted. Mm. Like, the part of me just also wants to see whether we can have like 25 days of test cricket in a series. Because when the hell was the last time that happened?
Honestly, so, yeah. I mean, we've got 20 already, Varun.
Yeah, we've got 20 already, right?
20 days of cricket. And I don't know what Bumble said, that the last test match had a 20-day pitch, or it was good enough for 20 days. I just hope things are different at the Oval. And let's see if we can get a result. Hopefully the rain stays away. And both those teams would be dying to finish this series on a high. Anyway, there's more to talk about in terms of lineups and injuries. And then we'll do some predictions as well. But before that, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Bairam and Varun, which we will rebrand to the Alva Konzi or Kaza Konda show someday. It will happen. This will become a regular feature. But anyway, we'll be back very, very shortly in like half a minute. So go nowhere.
Ross Taylor couldn't see at night or when the clouds were in. Eventually, he had to see an eye specialist who would fix his eyesight. In the 2 years before the change, he still averaged more than 50 in international cricket. The top level of batting talent can basically see in the dark. That is who we are talking about in our new book, The Art of Batting. Head over and order your copy today.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Bairam and Varun. And before we get into the lineups and injuries and whatnot, there's this really fun comment over here that I really want to bring up. It's by Shitman. And those of you who won't understand this, which will be a lot of you, there was a Kimapa show just now. It was live. And I was actually in the comments. I was watching it. And I wanted to ask Robbie a question on what was going through his mind when he bowled that delivery in the famous 2007 World T20 bowl-out game versus Pakistan when he hit the stumps, and whether or not they practice for it, India, as a unit prior to the tournament. And of course, you know, these things get lost in translation. Jared doesn't know that Krikazi is me. And it didn't get asked, but I had put out a comment that I can't seem to send a super chat. If someone wants to send this on my behalf, I'll give them a shout-out on the next live. So, shit, man, even though you didn't do that for me, here's your shout-out. I appreciate it. Now, let's move on to the injuries and lineups. Let's start with India, Varun. We know for a fact that Rishabh Pant will not feature because he has a broken metatarsal. And Dhruv Jurel is probably going to be, most definitely actually, be going to be keeping wicket in his place. Now, as far as it comes to Jasprit Bumrah, we've got some conflicting reports. We were initially told, and this was Crickinfo reporting, that Bumrah will not be playing the fifth test match at the Oval. And now I've heard that Shubman Gill in the press conference has mentioned that they'll make a decision tomorrow. So, do you think he'll play?
Yeah, at last I heard, I assumed he wasn't going to play.
That's what I thought as well.
So I'm surprised. I think they could play him. I think he has had a few days of break. But honestly, I think it entirely does depend on how he's feeling, isn't it? If he's going to bowl, like if he's not completely fit, like I don't see the point in risking him. But like the idea is that you just play him, and because you have to go for the win now, right? To draw the series. You don't, like, a draw or a loss isn't good enough in this point.
Look, both of those blows are big. Let's start off over there, right? Rishabh Pant has had two failures all series. Even with a broken toe, he managed to eventually get his 50. And there was that one innings where he manages like single digits, and then that 25. And Jofra gave him some trouble, let's be real. But other than that, he was beyond outstanding. I would say that this was really his series as well as many other batters like KL Rahul, Shubman Gill, Jaiswal has had his moments. But Pant is a big miss because he's a disruptor. He comes out there and England are worried that he's going to smash his second ball down the ground, and he is just going to score quick runs, and he'll throw all of our plans into a spanner. So get well soon, Rishabh Pant. We all love you and we're praying for your speedy recovery. And I mean, you came back from a career-threatening injury, so this is probably a cakewalk for you. Jasprit Bumrah is interesting. There is one angle that, hey, if you risk playing him over here, he might not even be that good, and then you might aggravate his fitness or injuries even further, and he might be out for longer. And I get that. I feel like I'm in that camp as well, because I want to see Bumrah play more and more, or at least play for longer. There are speculations that this might be his last World Test Championship cycle, and I think there is merit to that argument, because, I mean, there's only so much that his body can take, and clearly he can't play back-to-back tests, right? Or can't seem to play back-to-back tests. That's what we've kind of learned in this series. But the other argument is compelling, and that's your argument, that, hey, you want to win the series. If you can put in a shift and you can help us win this test match, you can take that 6 month long break and recuperate on your own time. I just don't know if that is worth the risk of seriously aggravating Bumrah's fitness condition.
Yeah, again, like, is he like 80% fit? Is it the precaution? Like, we don't really know. Cricket's so bad at communicating how injured players are. So it's like, it's one of those things where all we can do is just guess, essentially. But it's like, if he's like 80 to 90% fit, maybe it is worth the risk to play him, because I think 80 to 90% of Bumrah is still probably India's best fast bowler. Right, I mean, I think that even on current film, because
I mean, I know that his pace dropped at Old Trafford, and you can expect that as well. He's got heavy workloads. I know Cheyenne hates this conversation, but if Bumrah is bowling 44 overs on average, you know, in the first two test matches, then I feel like someone with his action, it is going to take a toll on him, right? But then again, you know, even at his worst, which was his previous game, right? I mean, he concedes his maiden 100 in Test cricket, and his average is now closer to 20 runs per dismissal. That is correct. 20 runs just per dismissal. He is still Jasprit Bumrah. He will still evoke fear in the hearts of English batters. And whilst they might have played him well, especially the top order, you can make a case for that. He is that guy. He is him. Playing him does have an impact on the opposition, and he does give India an edge every time he plays, because there is a gulf between Bumrah's quality and the rest of India's seamers. Also, Siraj is tired. Let's not forget about that. Yeah. Does he play, right? Do you want to risk him? Because this guy has only had one break, Varun, and that was the Champions Trophy.
I'm assuming he is going to play for some reason. I think it's like they just don't mind playing him. And also, Siraj does, he's more of a workhorse than Bumrah, but I do feel bad for him at times. The other thing is, like, even if India do play Bumrah, for the love of God, use him as a first change bowler. I've seen this debate on the internet where people almost put it like, oh, well, Bumrah is really good with the new ball. So it's like, but Siraj and Akash need to, like, he's not actually very good with the new ball, like the very brand new ball. He isn't always good at controlling it.
Debate, right? Yeah. One other angle over here, Varun, is that when you are playing with the Duke's ball, the lacquer tends to come off after 10 to 12 overs and the ball swings a bit more. So why not use Jasprit Bumrah in that phase, right? I think that's a very valid argument.
Yeah. So, like, would it not be better for, like, to, let's say, have Akash bowling a 6-over spell, use Siraj for 3 overs, decide if he's in rhythm. If he's in rhythm, give him all the 6 overs. If he's not, bring Bumrah on. I don't get why they seem to feel the need to give all the bowlers 6-over spells, because that way you also ensure that the three best bowlers are bowling for longer together.
That's actually quite valid. I think you have a point over there. Also, I mean, look, you've got to assess Siraj's fitness as well. He's bowled massive workloads in this entire series and the BGT. He bowled to Harry Maguire for quiet crying out loud, right? Like, there's been a lot. And he was clearly looking quite drained in this Old Trafford test. Let's be real, right? He looked like someone whose body had gone through a lot. And Siraj is a rhythm bowler. When he's hot, he's hot. When he's cold, he can go for runs. So this is what I want India to do. For once, play Kuldeep. And you may as well consider going triple deep, because Arshdeep hasn't had a game. Akash is probably going to play. And for the love of God, Kuldeep needs to play at least one test match. I say go triple deep, the full deep.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I think it's a fair idea. But then again, it's the same problem again, isn't it? Like, three new ball bowlers. Even though I don't think Bumrah is a new ball bowler, it's not even like we are not even saying that, oh, Bumrah is like extremely great with the new ball. He's not very good with the new bowler. So it's like, I don't think you're losing anything if you have him like bowling from like the 10th over onwards, right? So I like just give Siraj, Akash, and Arshdeep, one of the two of them, the new ball.
All I'll say to Gautam Gambhir and Shubman Gill over here is that you could potentially have it all rolling in the deep. But yeah, honestly, I understand how they are obsessed with extending their batting lineup, and that's why Shardul Thakur has gotten 2 test matches in the series. But, you know, your batting lineup is doing just fine. Everyone in the top 7 is getting runs, so maybe if you want to sacrifice a certain Shardul Thakur who doesn't really extend your batting lineup, and you don't really gain a bowler out of him either because you don't trust him enough with the ball, and I mean, he's old now, and he's a swing bowler, and it's the wobble seam era and all of that stuff. Kuldeep turns the ball both ways. He is probably the most accurate left-arm wrist spinner I've ever seen, and there is a bit in it for spinners this summer for England, in England, right? We've seen that. I mean, even in the previous test match, Jadeja ends up picking up 4 for, and he's India's most successful bowler. So I would actually go Kuldeep over Shardul, and Jirel comes in for Rishabh Pant, and then I'm fine with Jadeja at 6, Washington at 7, and then you go triple deep, because I feel like Akash has to play. He's had success on this tour already. And Arshdeep can then bowl with the new ball with Akash. And as we said, if Bumrah is to play, he bowls first change. And then if he doesn't, then you've got the likes of Anshul Kamboj or Prasad Krishna to come in first change.
I have travelled the cricketing world, and so I've collected 2 things. The phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny Sims and get the one that does it all. Go to Selly.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Selly.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I completely agree with you. I know people have had some issues with thinking, well, do India play three spinners? The argument I give against that is, if you think one of Jadeja or Washington are good enough as batters to bat at six, their bowling becomes irrelevant. So the conversation then becomes, you're just playing a 3-2 combination.
True.
And the six bowler, who's Jadeja, let's say, on current bowling form, his bowling is just a bonus to you at that point.
Absolutely. Ravindra Jadeja averages 37.5, I believe, in Test cricket. And his average batting average in England is 42.15, if I'm not wrong. And he's picked up wickets here and there, but primarily he's been a frontline batter for India this series with four half centuries on the bounce. And then he gets his 100, even if England didn't want him to get 100, right? But he gets it. He has been exceptional for India. And I mean, look, I am completely comfortable with Jadeja at six. That allows Washington to bat at seven, and he's shown us that he is probably a better batter than he is bowler, although I love the drift. But I think when you compare him with Ashwin or someone, like, he is not as good a bowler as Ashwin, but he's a better bat than Ashwin. That's how I look at this, right? And he is an all-weather all-rounder. That also he has proved on this tour. So I think that your batting is quite healthy with Washington at seven, and you can afford to play Kuldeep then. And as Varun said, that it is kind of 3-2 because Jadeja is pure, a pure bat in one sense. Of course, India has taken some hits with Pant and potentially Bumrah. Of course, I don't know what Gill means over here, but I still think they might not play him. Anyway, I still also believe that India looks a bit better than England because they have lost a fair few people over here, right? Now, Liam Dawson didn't have the worst game at Old Trafford, but he has been axed. And Brydon Carse, if he played at the Oval, I think his body would just fall apart. So he's gone. Jofra Archer was bowling like 128 kilometers per hour in the third innings at Old Trafford. So it's smart to rest him. And he is a big blow because he's an enforcer and he has gotten a lot of left-handed batter wickets. The biggest blow for England is losing their captain, their best bowler in the series, and someone who had found form with the bat in Benjamin Andrew Stokes. And that, I feel like, literally kind of divides their potency by, like, I wouldn't say two, but like 1.5, because Stokes has a lot of magnitude and he brings an impact and he's literally bowling 10 over spells. So I feel that whilst not a lot separates both of these understrength teams, India still have an edge and they have the momentum from Old Trafford.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Like, England losing Stokes' bowling is absolutely a big deal. And he just looked like he was getting into good batting form as well. So,
yeah.
Whereas I think he was in terrible batting rhythm, well, like a good few years before that. So they are legitimately losing a proper all-rounder now, right? It's not even like they're losing a bowling all-rounder or a batting all-rounder. So it's a big deal for them. He's been by some distance their best bowler. And you could argue he's been the best bowler of the series as well.
Yes, easily.
So technically in India did achieve what I think India would have wanted, and that's remove Stokes from the chessboard, I guess.
Yeah.
And England probably, like, we're assuming they removed Bumrah because I don't know, we don't know if Bumrah plays or not. Like, the people that have to suffer is us who have to watch those attacks on the field. But still, I think it's, yeah. So with Jacob Bethel, I think they probably just did a straight swap for Benwood's him.
I actually think that because they bring in Jacob Bethel in the Ben Stokes position, they didn't feel that was enough. And that is why you see Jamie Overton in this lineup as well, because now I feel England are probably trying to cover for Stokes by bringing in two of those guys, right? Overton is a better bowler than he is batter, but Jacob Bethel, let's be real, his first-class bowling average is not good at all. So you're not getting a lot of spin bowling options. I mean, might as well bring up the super chat by Palish Sasidharan, who says England has 0.75 spinners, so no chance for Kuldeep. I mean, those are two different arguments, I feel, because Kuldeep could still play. But I do see your point of view or your thought process with respect to England, because that is 0.75 spinners. And that's including Joe Root, mind you, you know?
So the aggressive move by England could have been, you move Smith to six, you put Dawson at seven, Overton at eight, Wokes nine.
Yeah,
I already forgot who the attack is.
Gus Atkinson and Josh Tonga back.
Right.
Who's
that would have probably... So there's probably something they don't trust in that combination. I don't know why they don't trust it. So because I think England won four seamers. That's why I think 8-11 would always going to be that. Then the choice becomes, would you want Bethel's batting or do you want let's say Dawson's bowling, and they preferred Bethel's batting, which I'm very surprised.
A very radical move would have been to draft Rehan Ahmadin, because he's scored 5 first class hundreds in this current county championship, mm-hmm. and he's 5 behind Adil Rashid, and that guy is taking wickets as well. So that would have been quite an interesting move. They didn't go there. I agree with you. The aggressive option would have been to stick with Dawson, not bring in Bethel, just bring in Overton and kind of, you know, replace Stokes again with 2 guys. But then, you know, I look at Bethel as an impact player, someone who could turn the game, and that's something that Dawson can't do, but Bethel can.
Hmm?
And we know that Stokes does that all the time, or with amazing frequency, at least had been doing that for a long time until he got his dip in form, and now he's sort of doing it again. But again, I feel like England's bowling attack, when I look at it right now, I'm not particularly like... There is no confidence inside of me that thinks that these guys are capable of taking 20 wickets. Like, who's taking the new ball with Chris Wokes, Varun? Is it Gus? Is it Overton?
I assume so.
Is it Josh Tung?
I think it
Tung?
Has to be Gus Atkinson, right?
I suppose so.
I don't know what's happening with Reebok bowling.
Yeah.
But, like, I really hope, like I think this maybe might be, like, Moeen Ali trauma, that India don't end up, like, giving him, like, a fifer to Bethel.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
they see off all the seamers and just gift Bethel a fifer. Like, I really hope that doesn't happen.
You know what? I'm going to have to go there, buddy. I'm going to have to look Jacob Bethel's first class bowling average, because I remember Jared did this and he kind of killed off the conversation.
Terrible.
It's really bad. Well, he's only 21 years of age, so you can...
So I think Michael Vaughan might have eventually mentioned this on his podcast. Like, Bethel, I think, like, if you look at how many balls he's faced this year and how many balls he's bowled, I think it's like he's averaging about 2 balls per day.
Yeah. Also,
so he's barely played in the cricket.
I've got his numbers up over here. 24 bowling innings in first class cricket, 12 wickets, an average of 70, a strike rate of 106. So you're not expecting wickets from Jacob Bethel. At best, he could hold up one end, and versus this Indian team, he's probably not even doing that. They're using their feet and they're smashing him to different parts of the park. So, I mean, it's a radical call. They've obviously thought to themselves that they don't need a spinner for these conditions and they want 4 seamers. Jamie Overton can crank it up at times, but do I look at him as someone who can terrorize India? Not really. Gus Atkinson, coming back from injury, wasn't in great form, even though he had a splendid English summer last year. And he was scoring tons at Lords and taking fifers and tenfers. And
he was doing cricket bingo, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's he was. He's basically etched his name on the Lords Honours Board like 3 different times.
I think he got 105 wicket haul in the match before Ben Stokes did for England. That's so stupid.
It is very stupid. But yeah, Gus has that... I don't know, scrambled seam delivery that was, you know, bearing fruit for him last summer, but that was the West Indies. This is India. This is an informed India. Everyone scored runs. Even Sai Sudarshan has scored 61 now. So I feel like India have a slight edge over here, even if Bumrah doesn't play. Because when I look at that England bowling attack, I'm like, yeah, who's getting the wickets over here, right? Like, Chris Wokes is also probably really, really tired by now. So it's interesting. Plus, like, you've got Ollie Pope as captain. Let's not forget. And he's no Ben Stokes. So he's going to be doing things differently. It's looking interesting. And if we come to predictions, I'll come to you next. I want to give mine first. I'm actually going India, and the series will be square at the end, 2-2.
Yeah, I'd like to for that to be the case as well, yeah.
Well, you'd like for that to be the case, Varun, but what's your prediction?
I feel like it's going to be an underwhelming draw.
Interesting. I
think, as comments have pointed out, England have gone with a very draw bowling attack because you have Atkinson, who's coming from injury, so you don't know how good he is.
Yes.
And Overton, who isn't just good and very, very good in general. So you're not really going to trust him to bowl a lot.
Yeah.
And then Bethel is basically like a part-timer at this point. So it's so they have to score a lot of runs. And if that is the case, I don't see, like, with prediction of rain as well, I feel like it is going to be a boring draw.
I
don't think England will win, but I also don't know if I can't say for certainty that I also think India will win just because of all these things that are happening.
I feel like England have incurred more damage in terms of injuries because Stokes and Jofra are big ones. And whilst Pant is big and potentially Bumrah is also quite big, I feel like pound for pound India are the better team, and they've adjusted to the conditions really well. And I mean, anyone would, I suppose, because it's been flat tech summer. But then again, I feel like if we get only 4 days of cricket in this test match, I think I'm with you. I think the game could very well end in a draw because that might not be enough time for a result. So you guys let us know what your predictions are for this test match in the comments section below. And I don't think we have anything else to talk about, do we?
No, I think we've covered everything, right?
I think that covers everything. So thank you for your interactions in the chat and your solitary super chat as well. And we'll be back soon enough. I mean, there's lots to talk about once this test match is over. And we've got some fun stuff planned for you as well. Just want to repeat that these podcasts are powered by our supporters on Patreon. And you can pick up one of them by going to patreon.com/goodareaspodcast. You'll get ad-free content. You'll get to chat with us exclusively, slag us off, and give us recommendations on different kinds of podcasts. And then, of course, one last reminder is that you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage, which can prove to be a one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. That's it for today, folks. Have a good one. Enjoy the test match. And best of luck to all English and Indian fans. Here's to hoping that we get an absolute cracker. And hey, let's hope we get 40 wickets, right? That's what I want. Anyway.
I want 3-day test match. That's all I ask for. maybe 2. I'll take 2 days as well. I don't care who wins. I want wickets.
Yes, same. Anyway, you guys have a good one. Enjoy yourselves. We'll see you soon enough. That's all for today, folks. Good luck and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.